The Ira Kaufman Podcast is presented by Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa and Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon. They support all of Ira's work here on JoeBucksFan.com, his Monday, Wednesday, and Friday columns, and of course, the Ira Kaufman Podcast. We appreciate you listening, and we appreciate all your support for the great dealerships of Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa and Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon. More than 70 years of Ed Morse quality and service across Florida. Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa, just west of 275 on Fletcher, and Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon right there on Causeway Boulevard. At Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon, the Mission Morse summer event continues, and they just have so many great things going on, including Saturday, July 28th, 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. Take a test drive, and Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon will make a donation to Forgotten Angels of Florida on your behalf. There'll be food, prizes, and entertainment. Plus, meet Quentin Aaron, star from the hit film The Blind Side. EdMorseCadillacBrandon.com for more details. And Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa, we appreciate their support. Later in this podcast, we'll be talking to Brian Danahy, general manager of Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa. But right now, here's Ira.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Happy Tuesday. It's the Ira Kaufman Podcast on JoeBucksFan.com, starring the sage of Tampa Bay sports, Mr. Ira Kaufman. It's training camp week. Tuesday, we're back. Podcast is available for you, of course, on iTunes, Podbean, Google Play. Subscribe at no cost. Listen on JoeBucksFan. Here he is, Mr. Kaufman, ready for his 40th training camp covering the National Football League. How are you, Ira?
Well, I'm excited, Steve, because this is our final podcast before training camp opens, Lee. But I'm also a little dispirited because I didn't pass muster and jury duty yesterday. I fell a little short. I said I was a journalist and I work at Joe Bucks Fan, and I think they drew a line right through my name. You're out, Kaufman. You're out. But I didn't really want to get on a jury duty because it would have been a 2 or 3 day affair. And I would have missed reporting day and maybe the first day of practice. I don't want to do that, Lee. I want to see if McCoy shows up in a kimono. I want to see who's coming in on a Segway. Yeah, you know, you got to see all these little details over there.
Didn't McCoy kind of tip his hand? He's coming in with a Batman version of Rolls Royce. I love his passion for Batman, but why would you taint a Rolls Royce? Rolls Royce!
There are still some McCoy skeptics out there, Steve. More than a few. And this whole thing with the Batmobile or a kimono, it's not going to go over well with these people. They want a football player.
You're on the money there, Ira. And, of course, you were talking to Lee DeCamper of Joe Bucks Fan. I'm Steve Isbitz. We are so fired up. It was great to hear, of course, some offers from your great sponsors, Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa, Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon. For the fans just coming back to Joe Bucks Fan, right? There's a lot of fans who just, not a lot, but there's a good share who just couldn't care less about the Bucks in June. Or in May, they see the draft, okay, a couple of pictures of Vita Vea, and they're done until now. So we welcome them back, and we're fired up. Of course, your columns, if they forgot, are Monday, Wednesday, and Friday.
We never wavered, though. We took them through the offseason, Steve. We survived. We got through the offseason.
we survived, sitting here doing our podcast, sipping cold beverages, and it's a tough life. All right, Sage, you are going out to training camp. We're interested in who's coming out there and all that kind of fun stuff. But a big announcement has been, because we're in the home stretch now, the training camp takeover. The training camp takeover is Saturday, August 4th. Now, the key points here are as follows. One, this was a massive blowout event last year that was on NFL Network, Hard Knocks, craziness, led by the commish, Justin Pawlowski.
And it certainly drew the attention of one Dirk Cutter, obviously.
Obviously, it was all over Buccaneers.com, and it was a big deal. Now it's happening all over again. Saturday, August 4th, the parking lot opens, I believe, at 7 a.m. Practice starts at 8:50, and the stick carriers are going to be out there at sunrise doing what they were doing last year, screaming and hollering and banging drums.
And the commish will be there at that time.
And the commish will be leading the charge now. This year you need tickets for training camp because the Bucks are giving out free tickets, but they want to make sure they know the numbers or whatever. The message to everybody listening is, don't worry about it, because the stick carriers have gobbled up tons of tickets. There will be extra tickets that they'll be passing out on training camp takeover day, right? So meaning you could get 6 tickets online, but I talked to a couple of guys, hey, they got their 6, and they're bringing a friend, and they got four they want to pass out and share, and so there's going to be a lot
of
tickets.
Pay it forward, Lee? Is that a little pay it forward? Yeah, why not?
It's called passion.
It's called passion, and just making sure that everybody could get in that wanted to in the movement, if you will, but also, hey, it's a free ticket, so I'll take six.
I'm also hearing that when Isbitz pulls up, and it's not going to be at 7 a.m., it might be at 9 a.m., but when Isbitz pulls up that day, he'll smuggle three people in his car and throw two people in the trunk and smuggle them past the Buck gates.
Easy,
only
Sage.
Kidding. Only kidding, Bucks. Only kidding.
Come on out. That's the message. Come on out. Saturday, August 4th, training camp takeover. It's going to be wild. The chanting. Now everybody gets to move around the field.
And it ends in the indoor facility.
Ends in the indoor in the AC. Tear the roof off that. And if you know what? If it goes over capacity for the indoor, then you won't be allowed in. You'll miss the last 45 minutes. You go home early. Or you'll just chant outside with the rest of the nuts if it comes to that. If it even comes to that. So just want to make sure everybody's out there. It's going to be one hell of a day. All right, now, Ira, look. Buccaneers did something today that...
Or didn't do something today.
They put up their murals today outside the stadium, and... The face of the franchise, as he's known, Mr. Jameis Winston, he got the Doug Martin treatment. He's not up there. Doug Martin was up there in 2016. They tore him down after he got suspended in 2017. And we know the rest of the story. Now Jameis is gone, but he's the quarterback. Now, what do you make of this, Ira?
Well, the face doesn't have his face up there. That's interesting. Lee, here's my reaction. I think it reinforces... I don't want to beat my own drum here because I never do that, right, Sage? Right, Lee? I did say on a couple of podcasts prior, and I think Isbitz agreed with me. For the fourth time in the calendar year 2018, Isbitz agreed with one of my points. And my point was the dynamic has changed around One Buck Place regarding Jameis Winston. By that I mean he may or may not be regarded at this point as the unquestioned quarterback of the future of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I don't think that's overhyped. I think there's some doubt where before there was no doubt. For example, a year ago, and when Winston got hurt early in the season, we think it was week two, but, you know, there was no question when he was deemed healthy he was coming back. There's no debate. Nobody cared
no,
what
should
the
there have been.
Yeah, no, nobody cared what the Buck record was. He's coming in. This year, and it's something we'll talk about, you know, in future podcasts, you know, what's the timetable for Jameis Winston? Do you put him in week four no matter what Fitzpatrick's done, no matter what the team has done? So, Lee, I'm taking this as a graphic example that Winston's stature within the organization has diminished. We don't know how much it's diminished, but I think it's diminished. And here's a current example, because if he's going to play in week four, without question, in week four, why isn't his mug going up on that mural? He's going to be the quarterback of the Bucs.
Well, I got to ask you a couple things. You met with the Glazers in May, correct? Was it May?
Yes.
And I know you had a sit-down with the Glazers. What was your feedback from them in May, what they thought of Jameis in May?
Full support. Full support.
Do you think there's any possibility that in May they did not know what Jameis told the NFL about his recollection was the evening in question?
Well, Lee, I'll say this. In May, what they had to go on was Jameis's full-throated denial, which he came out right after we found out about the NFL investigation. Winston with a strong denial of the accusations. A few months later, now that the decision's come down, I don't know how the Glazers feel about Winston because, quite frankly, Steve, my information is, he doesn't have much defense for that night because he really doesn't know what happened. Really doesn't know what happened that night. Now, that's a change.
Now, I don't want to out anything here. So I'm going to ask this question, and I'm treading lightly.
Your tread answer, lightly, my man.
Tread even lighter with your answer. But I want an honest answer, which you always are. You came across some information about Jameis and the night in question. When was that? When you first heard about that? You know what I'm talking about. I just don't want to release it out in public.
About a week before I sat down with the Glazers in May.
And I know the chain of command, so to speak, you know, where that information came from. It seems improbable to me that the Glazers did not know that information.
You're probably right. So you're saying what's changed?
Boys, let me take you in the heart of the matter here.
Go ahead, Steve, as is your custom.
Come on now. The Glazers had Jameis' side of the story. They heard everything that Jameis was able to tell them, most likely. They knew his side of the story.
He was on the record with a denial.
After he got suspended, they heard the victim, alleged victim's side of the story. And you know the Glazers got their hands on the NFL investigation. So that's what's changed. They saw the other side or two of the story. And it seems
also, it doesn't sound like we're getting a continual denial by Winston.
It seems to have led us to this point that the Glazers saw this, and now all of a sudden Jameis is off the stadium. But an important point that hasn't been brought up or I haven't heard anywhere else, they easily could have put Jameis on the stadium. They didn't have, you know, some of those murals are multiple guys. They could have done something a little bit different and had Jameis with Fitzpatrick and Cutter on one. Could have gotten a little creative just to not pull him off completely, but, you know, diminish his face up there. But they chose to take him off completely. That's a big deal.
Am I stretching it the point to say that it suggests there are some seeds of doubt within the organization regarding Winston's future with the franchise? Lee, is that a stretch? You heard what happened on Monday.
There has to be some. I'm trying to figure out what changed, because it just seems virtually impossible that when you came across the information you came across, that the Glazers would not have known the same information.
As Steve said, they have the details of the NFL probe. They have the details.
Mm-hmm.
It was a long probe. I don't know how exhaustive it was, but it was long.
The details that, for some reason, the NFL and all sides of this have kept quiet.
I can't believe it hasn't leaked out. I can't believe it.
Well, somebody doesn't want it to leak out. And I'm not going to speculate who it is, but for some reason, it ain't out there. And you would think if it looked favorably on Jameis, his camp would have leaked it out.
Yeah.
So you wrote a column, just to clarify for the listeners, you wrote a column about a change dynamic at $1 as it relates to Jameis. You didn't know what that was. Does that mean he's got to prove himself?
You sensed it.
But now we see it. The Glazers spoke by not doing anything. You know, a non-picture speaks 1,000 words, I guess is the phrase. It's a very interesting spot we're all in.
Well, we're on a worry is the right word. What certainly has my antenna up, more so than the mural, is when this came down, I understand and I get that some people were scattered across the country because vacation time. Cutter was Idaho, Light was wherever, but we knew he was out of
town. Nebraska, yeah.
Was he in Nebraska visiting his dad? Okay.
Yeah.
Jameis was in town, but to this date, as of Monday, we're recording this Monday evening, there's nothing about Jameis. What I mean by that is, years ago when Brett Favre announced he had to go to rehab, the Packers, Holmgren, Ron Wolf,
they're out in force.
His wife, they had a press conference immediately. They're all standing with him at the lectern at wherever they call it, Packers headquarters, all behind him. When Roethlisberger came down, you know, what he did, and allegedly, I could have swore I saw a video with Mike Tomlin and Kevin Colbert right behind him.
Maybe Dan Rooney.
I can't remember if it was Rooney, but I know for a fact that I saw Mike Tomlin in that picture. Could have sworn Kevin Colbert, their general manager, was there as well. But I know for a fact Tomlin was there, because I remember how, you know, he looked like he got hit by a Mack truck or something. With Jameis, something lesser than Roethlisberger. And obviously, Favre comes out and says, I'm addicted to painkillers. Where is the Bucks? Where are they to show support for Jameis?
And, Steve, I don't think that's going to change much on Wednesday when players report and we start getting some interviews at the podium, including Cutter. I don't think it's going to change much. I think the prevailing thought that's going to come from the podium is we're moving on. We don't want to talk about it. It's behind us. It's in the rearview mirror. And I don't think people are going to want to talk about it like it never happened, including Winston, if he does go to the podium.
If I may, Steve, and Steve's much more adept at this than I am, I think that is piss-poor public relations. You get it out of the way. Like, we're addressing this
a one-dayer,
and that's it. There will be no further comment. And you go up there and you show support for your quarterback. Right now, it looks like they're making him twist in the wind by himself. And that, to me, is more damning than a mural on the side of a stadium.
If Winston goes to the podium, and I think that's a if with a capital I, on Wednesday, if he does, I'm going to be sitting there. I'm usually in the second row, first seat. You guys know where I am. The Kemper's right next to me.
All right.
And if I get a chance to ask the first question, if it's going to be, you know.
Do you want to tip off your rivals?
Well, I want to tell our readers that we're on the case over
Sage
here.
Sage has no rivals.
Listeners.
Okay.
My first question is, Jameis, Do you still declare that you are innocent of the charges? It's a very simple question.
You know what he's going to say.
Do you still declare that?
You know what he's going to say.
As you did in November.
You know what he's going to say.
As you did. What's he going to say?
Of course I'm innocent. He's not going to incriminate himself.
Is he going to say, of course I'm innocent?
If he says anything else, here come the lawsuits and here come the handcuffs.
All right. I'm asking it.
There's a lot of ways to ask the question. I mean, I've thought about phrasing to Jameis where he could get his message out without incriminating himself. I mean, you know, just because you say something at a podium, he'd have to really detail it, which he's never going to do. I don't know. The whole thing to me is horrible because the Bucks, for some reason, Ira, I don't know why, for some reason, they consciously have desired to turn the opening day or two of training camp into the Jameis Winston sex offender question-a-thon. That's what they've decided they wanted to do. Because I don't care if Jason Light is somewhere else. There's called conference calls. Dirk Cutter's been back in town at least a week.
You know, in another life, Isbitz would have wanted to be a PR man.
No, like, a lawyer.
He's got a lot of ideas in that.
No, he would have been a lawyer.
It's just a problem. It's a problem because I don't know why you would choose to do this when you could have straightened it out earlier, at least gotten it all out of the way. I mean,
absolutely.
Gosh, somebody should have put Jameis on Jeff Cameron up in Tallahassee, friend of Jameis's family, a guy, you know, broke a story on Jameis. This story on Jameis is getting suspended. They could have put him on his show for a friendly interview. The audio would have circulated, and they could have sat down with us.
Yeah.
They would have said, hey, Ira, you want to interview Jameis?
They already had experience with
us.
Yeah,
you want to interview Jameis again?
And they came away encouraged about it.
But they choose to do it this way. I don't know if we'll see Jameis or hear from Jameis. I don't expect it, but you never know with the Bucks. You never know.
Yeah.
Would you be shocked if Cutter speaks at length about the Winston suspension? Or is he going to say, we're moving on?
Well, he's going to do what the Bucks tell him to do. If the Bucks, for whatever reason, say, you aren't talking about it, he won't talk about it. But it would not shock me whatsoever if he just discusses it a little bit, because it's the elephant in the room. It's the elephant in the room.
Well, it's a football question.
It depends how much he's pressed.
Until it's actually addressed, they're going to keep getting questions. Now if the powers that be at One Buck Palace come out and said, okay, we're going to discuss this for an hour with various people, after that, it will not be addressed again.
And by the way, the news side people from the TV stations, I mentioned that last week, they're all going to be out in force. All the news people that never show up at One Buck, they're going to come in there like flies to honey. You know that.
You mean Avery Cotton?
Lee's hoping. You know, there's a good question, though, Ira, is what's the media's role here? We'll defer to your sage wisdom, 83 years covering the NFL. The reality is, how much should the media push this, right? Because you know what would happen up in New York. You were covering the Giants. And is there a limit? Is there an acceptable limit here? Is it okay to just say to Dirk Cutter, hey, Dirk, pushing him with questions to get some answers. Dirk, do you believe the fans deserve any answers here to the Winston situation?
No, doesn't Winston's supporters deserve, and he's got a lot of them, and they've backed him through and through. Lee, don't they deserve this thing to be addressed?
Well, here's what I told Rock Riley. I said, personally, as just a guy on the street, not as a journalist or a fan, I could care less. You know why? No matter what Jameis says, the haters are going to hate him, even more maybe. His fans will support him no matter what he says. So it's pointless. It's absolutely pointless.
Well, Steve, I'll say this. Jameis should look at this as a chance to begin his rehab tour.
He could.
With $21 million at stake. And you guys have made a big, big point, and you're not wrong, that the general consensus from the fans is not lost on the Glazer family. You've made that point many times, that decisions sometimes are made in large part to what they think the fans are thinking. Steve, you made a big point of that.
Well, the Glazers made that quote. They said the famous quote, fans are our stockholders, when they fired Chucky, and they took the pulse of the fans. And
they thought they were turning on Chucky.
They
right?
thought that what the people wanted was time to move on. I don't know. I'm just saying, you didn't answer my question. You deflected to Lee, so I'm going to come after you again. Should the media be hounding this till we get some answers, or should we just let it go?
You can't just let it go. It's the face of the franchise, Lee. I mean, this is not the Benenock, Kappa duel at right guard.
All right, Ira, so you ask a question about this to Cutter. Rick Stroud asks a question. TV guy asks a question. I ask a question. Rock Riley asks a question. Cutter's not saying much. How long does that go on?
You can turn it into a football question, Lee. Dirk, is there any question in your mind that Jameis Winston comes in week 4 as your starting quarterback?
That's a fair question.
That's a fair question.
Absolutely fair question.
That's a fair question. Mm-hmm. There's ways to do it, Isbitz. Follow my lead
now,
in that room.
By the way, if Cutter says anything remotely close to, we'll see how it goes, red flag, man. Red flag.
That's a tough one for Cutter.
Well, I've thought about that. It's an interesting one because, of course, you do want to keep your week 4 opponent guessing. There's no value in telling the Bears now that Jameis will be there.
Of course, you just set the prairie on fire by doing that.
Well, there's value in filling Jameis Winston with some confidence if you think he's going to be your guy.
If he doesn't have confidence and he needs a one-liner for confidence, then he's soft.
Yeah, he's SOL.
Soft.
Yeah.
Ira, last year.
He's reeling right now. The man's reeling.
By the way, to Steve's point, I'm sure if the Bucks, like I said, and this is a little bit inside baseball, we know that whenever a coach or a player gets on the podium, he's coached up before he gets on there. We all know that. The Bucks have, FYI for our listeners, if you watch the videos on Buccaneers.com, occasionally they'll show the coach or player come out of a door.
They're briefed.
Behind that door, they're always briefed. There's a hallway there, and they're briefed. It's almost like a green room type of thing. But I'm sure if Cutter was going to say, to keep people guessing, Cutter would tell Jameis, or the Bucks PR people would tell Jameis, this is what Cutter's going to say. Don't take it the wrong way. He wants to keep the Bears guessing.
All right.
I don't know.
Oh, my gosh. How could they not? That would be incompetence of the highest order.
It's hard to say. And you know what? Last year, what did he do? He said, Doug Martin coming back in week 4. I don't know what that looks like. I've never had a guy come back.
That's
off,
true.
Off the couch for 4 weeks? I don't know.
All I know is my new priority.
And he get the ball? Hell yeah.
My new priority is getting Ryan Fitzpatrick ready for New Orleans. That's all. That's it. That's my priority.
Well, it will be interesting, Sage. And, you know, we have a lot to talk about. And obviously, Cutter talks to the media every day at training camp, every single day. So it can be revisited in many different ways, many different options.
You know, let's not lose our focus here for a second. We're talking about...
Well, what's their focus? There's no chicks walking around?
We're talking about... Well, your focus is Avery Cotton. Steve, we're talking so much about Winston, Fitzpatrick, what are they going to do week 4. The big picture, Lee, and I think you'd agree, the big picture. This defense is supposed to be a hell of a lot better. Got nothing to do with Jameis Winston.
Yeah.
A hell of a lot better. The offensive line's got a new center. Marpet moves back to guard. Should, in theory, Sweezy didn't do a thing last year. In theory, how bad can Benenock be? Can he be much worse than Sweezy? In theory, they're a lot better in the trenches. And if they are, Lee, you can win football games with a good running game and a pass rush. Yes, you can.
Well, yeah, if you have a dominant pass rush.
And an average passing game. You can win 9 or 10 games.
You know, I'll have to admit, I was leaning positive about this season until Jameis's sentence came down. Ever since then, I just
don't you backtrack. You're already on record.
Ever since that sentence came out, I am.
You're right there with Colin Cowherd, my man.
Almost, man.
All right.
I'm so down, but what you, they have to have a a dominant defensive front line this year to overcome what they're going to have to
Steve,
overcome.
If Mike Smith can't come up with a pass rush with this roster, with this depth chart, that's on him, and Brenson Buckner. That's on them.
Oh, of course. But what isn't on them is the excitement of the Bourbon Street Takeover, which is opening day in New Orleans. You go to fanretreat.com. You click on popular retreats. You can sign in. You can join the retreat. It's awesome. There's some great news that is coming out of this. A lot of people have booked already under $400 for the whole trip. And fanretreat.com is where you go. You can search there also all of your airline flights, all tickets for all events. Use your Joe Bucks fan code.
You're referencing the fan retreat in New Orleans. A reader by the name of Rashad Brown, loyal Joe Bucks fan reader. Last night.
Oh, sounds like a linebacker.
It does, doesn't it?
There you go.
Last night, he happened to Twitter Joe Bucks fan.
Oh,
a picture of him at the gumbo shop.
He said, you know your stuff, the Kemper.
Yeah, so I hope he had the bread pudding with whiskey sauce. It's very underrated.
Ooh,
very
that's
underrated.
Strong.
I promised you. Now, already, I understand there's some heavy hitters are going to bring you to Brennan's. So
I'm still available for lunch over
okay,
there.
Okay, well, the gumbo shop, I'm still buying you a meal there.
You got it.
Just so you know, I used to work with a guy who would eat three cheeseburgers for lunch every day. and he would embed aspirin into each cheeseburger to... He felt it broke up the cholesterol, and and it was good for him. So I might recommend that method. I don't know if it's good or not. But
what did your cardiologist say?
I'm going to try Cialis. I'll try Cialis instead of the aspirin, see how that works
out. If your buffet lasts for more than 4 hours.
Call your doctor.
Hey, fanretreat.com is running this retreat. It's going to be great. The night before party with Justin Pulaski, Lee, Ira Kaufman, talking to fans. All the details are at fanretreat.com as to where it's going to be. There's a group hotel, and people have booked their trip for under $400, Ira, which is really cool. The tickets, and there's going to be some discount tickets coming out. Fanretreat.com. Just get there, sign in, click that you're interested.
And Lee, what better town for a weekend than
better
than the Big Easy? Doesn't get much bigger.
It is going to be a fun time. Now, Ira, speaking of Big Easy... One little nugget I wanted to throw at you because you love nuggets.
I thought I got an announcement to make.
You got an announcement. I'm going to give you one nugget first.
He's setting you up.
A nugget. You don't have to eat the whole thing.
All right.
Gerald McCoy, after this year, Ira, will have earned $110 million from Team Glazer. What's your reaction to that? Just your quick reaction.
My reaction is he should finance the next Spider-Man movie and let him fight the Hulk, and Gerald McCoy's name is on the producer. Now, look, I'm not going to smack Gerald McCoy around. He's made 6 straight Pro Bowls. By the time he wraps up his career, whether it's with the Bucks or somebody else, Lee, he's going to be a borderline Hall of Fame player. Borderline. You know, Revis was the best cornerback of his time when he was at his peak. To me, that gets you in the Hall of Fame if it's like more than 1 year. You know, 3 or 4 years is an eternity in the NFL. Well, you could argue that over 6 or 7 years, you know, until Aaron Donald showed up, of course, McCoy was the guy. You could argue that. He's a borderline guy, and he's not finished yet. I'm very curious to see what he does with some better talent around him, which we will see this fall. And if he's still, you know, getting 6 sacks and the Bucs are 5-11, I think that's going to tarnish McCoy's reputation.
Well, since you brought this up, and we didn't discuss this beforehand, Miko had her say about Revis last week. And I don't know.
Give me her line. Give me her line.
Well, basically, she threw out her husband's numbers, Brent Grimes' numbers, compared to Revis's. He's right up there, if not still there. And as Miko accurately points out, Revis was done when he was 33. Brent Grimes still starting at 35.
With all due respect to Miko, who I get along with, you can't go by sheer numbers in this respect. Nobody threw at Revis. How's he supposed to get interceptions?
Could you say that about Grimes too?
To a lesser extent. Okay. To a lesser extent. There's no Grimes Island. Now I know part of it was Revis played in New York.
Thank you.
But Steve, you saw Revis at his peak for 3 or 4 years. He was the best. Revis was the best, and Grimes is not at that level. That's no knock on Grimes. Grimes is a heck of a player and still is.
Just like
that. But Revis was the best of his time.
I always remember, and this to me, I remember it vividly because it came from you, and you've seen football, again, 40 years
now. Don't judge him by his year with the Bucks. Don't judge him by that.
You said you saw Larry Fitzgerald, put a move on Revis that left your jaw on the floor.
Yes. Yes.
That says
absolutely. Absolutely. And Fitzgerald's a Hall of Famer.
Yes,
he's
sir.
Going into Canton. No knock there. What a move by Fitzgerald. I still remember it. It was a double move. And, of course, the quarterback had 11.2 seconds to find him.
Yeah, that was against the Bucks. Yeah. Now you have a big announcement, Ira?
I got an announcement. I don't know if about big, but you know what? It'll get a little more pub for Joe Bucks fan. That's never a bad thing.
I've had something to do with I got
a phone call last week. Joe Horrigan, Pro Football Hall of Fame.
I thought you were going to say it was a porn call.
Never mind that. No, and who's the one who's going out with the porn star?
That's Jimmy GQ.
Yeah, Jimmy GQ. Well, it doesn't trickle down to a lowly sports writer. I got a call from Joe Horrigan. He's the communications director. And I've been on the board since 05. Had my share of successful presentations, although I'm in a slump right now. I'm in a John Lynch slump, acknowledged. And I can't wait to get talk about Rondé. Hasn't happened yet. Maybe it'll happen in February in Atlanta. He asked me if I would be interested in becoming a member of the senior committee.
Oh!
This is 9 people out of 46.
Esteemed.
And on a rotating basis, 5 out of the 9 every other year go to Canton. All expenses paid. That's the key phrase.
Look at the smile on his face.
All expenses paid. And, of course, right now I only go to Canton when somebody gets in that I made the present. I went for Dungy, spent my own money. for Dungy. I spent it. And by the way, I was appalled because there wasn't a lot of Buck presentation there. It was all Colts, all Colts. Now, the Glazers did show up, Brian and Joel.
Is that when you were at the Tribune?
No. The Tribune folded in May, and the ceremony was in August. And I just joined Joe Buck's fan. But you guys had no reason to send me up the can for Dungy. But I went. That's respect.
Sure.
It's respect. By the way, that I'll expect $1,000 in the next check in arrears. Yeah, in arrears.
In arrears.
But anyway, I said it would be my privilege to serve. And, sometimes timing is crazy because Jimmy Giles happened to call a couple hours later and said he was meeting with the – and I've had discussions with Giles before. He doesn't understand why he keeps getting passed up. Jimmy Giles was a threat. He's in the Bucks Ring of Honor.
Yeah.
Some bad Buck teams. You know, he was the only receiver that Doug Williams trusted. And Giles told me that he and the Bucks have put together a video, and he's got some great quotes from the Buddy Ryans of the world and Dan Hampton's. When we played the Bucks in 1981, you're the only guy we ever game planned for. That's the only guy we cared about. Jimmy Giles.
How's he getting quotes from Buddy Ryan? Is he using a soothsayer or something?
He got him years ago.
Wait a minute.
Anyway.
Ira, clarify the news here. So have you accepted the position?
I accepted the position on behalf of Joe Buck's fan.
Yay! So you are now a member of the 9-man senior committee.
And I voted this year, and I whittled the list down to 15 names that are going to be talked about by the guys in Canton. They go a couple of weeks after the induction ceremony. They spend about 3 days in Canton. They talk to a couple of designated current Hall of Famers.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
The Willie Lanier's of the world, and Dan Fouts, and they get their thoughts. And they come up with one year there's one senior guy, the next year there's two senior guys. It alternates with the contributors. And, next year, 2019, I'll be going to Canton as part of that five-person contingent, and I'll have a big say and who the senior candidate is for 2019. And when I told that to Jimmy Giles, he goes, there's my ticket to Canton, Copper. I go, take it easy, Jimmy.
Congratulations, Ira. Congratulations. Who are you replacing?
That I don't know. Maybe somebody from the Daily News. That bloodletting. I'm still upset about
it. So you don't know. So when do they make this official? And not that anything on your podcast is not official.
Well,
but when
it's
got
to be official because they sent me a ballot to check off 15 names that those guys are going to be whittling down to one. And I did send the ballot back, and it had my name on it to sign there, so it's official. I am now part of the senior committee.
Oh, I can't wait to issue a press release. We'll see if the Tampa Bay Times covers this news.
Easy now. Stay classy, Steve. Stay classy.
Or if they're too egomaniacal to share news with the people of Tampa. We'll see. Well, congrats, Ira.
I've been
looking
forward to being on one of those there's a contributor subcommittee.
It's an honor.
Also, it's an honor. It's an honor.
All right, Ira. Very
And you know what? You know
nice.
What part of it is? Part of it is that, as Steve said, I've been covering football for about 87 years. Seriously, why would you have a 25-year-old who's on the board be a member of the senior committee and their frame of reference is 2001? Mm-hmm. They didn't see these guys from the 70s. They didn't see Joe Jacoby. So I'm going to be voting on the Joe Jacobys of the world. You have to have some reference about
sure.
it.
Steve just asked if you replace someone you're not sure. Wasn't a former colleague of yours that covered the Giants? He passed away recently. The guy at Lawrence Taylor tried to choke?
not Ernie Palladino.
Yeah.
No, he was never on the committee.
Okay.
Never on the committee.
But he passed.
But he just passed away. I remember Ernie. Yeah, he played a Westchester County paper.
No, it's a great point, Ira. Senior committee. I mean, it helps to have seen these guys play and understand where they
these
fit.
These are guys who apparently fell through the cracks.
Mm-hmm.
Fell through.
So
now you say, why'd they fall through the cracks? Well, I don't know.
Well, Jerry Camber fell through the cracks, and he was one of the best ever players.
You'll have all your Brooklyn boys hammering you with the Joe Klecko stuff soon enough.
I'll tell you a couple of guys that I did check off on my 15 is Ken Riley, the Rattler.
Oh, he was good.
From 65 career Bengals.
Okay,
Ken Riley, okay, no, 65 interceptions.
What was I thinking?
That's on the all-time list. It's like top five. Has never been in the room to be discussed. Never. Ken Anderson, also a Bengal.
Underrated.
He won 4 passing titles. Ken Anderson. Also led him to a Super Bowl. They lost to the Niners, but, he was a very good quarterback.
Who was his quarterback coach when we first broke in?
Hold on. Wasn't
Walsh.
Wasn't it Bill Walsh?
Could have been Bill Walsh. Yeah, could have been Bill Walsh. Nice move there. What else you got, Steve?
We got some Buccaneers news. Kendall Beckwith, second-year linebacker, very strong, versatile rookie year last year, is a third-round pick, last pick of the third round. Of course, he had that unfortunate car accident in the spring, early spring, and The Bucks put him on their non-football injury list for the start of training camp. They can activate him at any time. He's still on the roster. There's a lot of technicalities with the August pre-53-man roster, but he's not practicing. That's a downer. He's a talented player. Your thoughts?
Look, I'm no soothsayer, and I say this with no relish. I think there's a little cause for concern here with Beckwith. That doesn't mean I don't think he's going to play in the fall. He's not going to miss 16 games, you wouldn't think. But this was a serious ankle injury.
Apparently
this is not
so,
a high sprain, which is bad enough. That's a 6-8 week injury. This is a 6-8 month injury, perhaps. I don't know if he's going to play a preseason game, Lee. I don't know if he's going to get on the practice field during training camp. And I certainly don't know that he's going to be in the lineup at the Superdome. This is a big opportunity for guys like Devontae Bond to step up. They're going to get a lot of snaps in training camp. Guys like you and I are going to keep an eye on Devontae Bond. Is he making any plays? Traditionally, the strong side linebacker in the Buck 4-3 defense doesn't make a lot of splash plays. Does not.
Nor does he play
through the years.
Players.
Yeah. And they come off the field on third down. And Beckwith's probably no different. But he had a very good rookie season. I think he hit the wall.
Yes.
Late in the season. But for 10 weeks, he was a stud.
Well, at least for 5 weeks there, he was an absolute stud.
To me, this is a great opportunity for Devontae Bond.
And the man formerly known as Darius Glanton.
That's right.
Darius something or other. There's also Cam Lynch. You know, I know people are infatuated
and,
with
and as a rookie.
Yeah, and yeah. I know people are infatuated with Fabio Boa. Then there's also the Sitchi guy from Wisconsin. I mean, the Bucks have a great linebackers coach, and they're deep at linebacker. I'm not worried. What has me worried was earlier today, today being Monday, earlier today, Scott Smith, who works for Buccaneers.com, multimedia maven, he tweeted out, and I quote, hopefully, he used the word hopefully, Beckwith will be able to resume practicing by the regular season start.
It's a little ominous, Steve.
That's not good.
Yeah, it's ominous. You know, with this injury to Beckwith, I can't say the Bucs are deep a linebacker anymore. I think you could say they totally were at the end of last season. But now, I mean, who's going to play middle linebacker if it came to that? And let's face it, Alexander was hurt last year, missed half the season. Lavonte David missed games last year.
You know, you make a great point. I think I'd be more concerned about who would be backing up Alexander if something happened to Alexander, because Beckwith has already shown he can play that position as well. I'd be more concerned about that than Devontae Bond stepping in for him for a month during a regular season.
I still think
because that's not a life-altering position for this defense.
I still think they're deep because any position you have injuries, you're not going to be deep anymore. And as far as the Bucs are concerned, linebacker, that may be their deepest position, that and wide receiver. So, I mean, we could say the same thing if Mike Evans got hurt and Godwin got hurt and Humphreys got
hurt. Well, maybe D-line now. Maybe D-line. It seems deep.
Possibly. But, sure. I mean, they were so shallow to begin with.
Yeah.
Whereas wide, I mean, Humphreys could probably be starting for a number of teams.
Yeah.
Godwin possibly, too.
If Humphreys is your fourth receiver, you're strong. You're strong.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. If he's your starter, you got problems. You got problems. But what's his name, Beckwith? Because of the uniqueness of the injury, that's why I see him as not, it's not a depth thing where he's got, hey, I got an ankle, he'll be back in October. This is a unique injury.
Maybe it happened early enough that it will only affect the early stages of the season.
For his sake, I hope so.
Anyway, that was the news.
Well, I got one here. I just thought of this. Evan Silva, I doubt that you know who he is. He's a Roto-World guy. He's a heavy, heavy in the stats because his fantasy is his forte, so to speak. Well, he had something I thought, just it was almost a throwaway one-liner, but thought it was interesting. And he was talking about, or he was writing about Humphreys, and he said, and I'm paraphrasing, Cutter lacks imagination. And he being Silva, had a stat that Humphreys, I think 83% of the time, has been a slot guy. And it got me thinking, you know, I think it's fair to say that at this point, Cutter's seat is warm. I'm saying hot, not saying he's locked to return, but it's warm. And what do you think about Cutter maybe saying, you know, and we all get the same impression, their backs are against the wall, so to speak, the coaches. What do you think are the chances Cutter's going to say, you know, I might want to try some different things here, or I might be watching football games on TV instead of the sidelines next year.
Well,
maybe put Humphreys try him at different spots.
Lee,
I do remember.
You're answering your own question because one of the main reasons Cutter has the job, other than he's supposed to be a quarterback guru, And I had some quotes in Monday's column, quoting Cutter directly, saying, you know, my relationship with the quarterback is the key. I'm the quarterback guy. You know, even though Jameis has had a quarterback coach. Steve, this goes back, I think, to something maybe even alarming. I mean, that's a strong word, but I said the offense has stagnated. I think it has taken a significant step back from 2015. The last 2 years, they're not scoring enough points. They're not.
Yeah.
You want to blame turnovers. You want to blame fumbles. You want to blame red zone. I don't care what you blame. Cutter's calling the plays, Steve. 2015, this was the number five offense in football. The last 2 years, they're struggling. Now, look, we know how bad the defense was last year. I'm not blaming Cutter for that. But they're not scoring enough points, Lee. When I look at the weapons here, and especially if Ronald Jones is a player, and that's an if, but if he's a player, they got all kinds of weapons.
Oh,
why can't they score points? Jared Goff lit up the scoreboard
I wrote about this Monday morning on JoeBucksFan.com.
He doesn't have the kind of weapons that Fitzpatrick Winston are going to have.
Not even close. Well, obviously, people think McVay is a guru when it comes to...
Cutter's supposed to be an offensive guru. Supposed to be.
Not like McVay. McVay is supposed to be in a different league of his own as far as matchups and things like that. But Monday morning, I wrote this on JoeBucksFan.com. Bill Polian last week was asked. He works for ESPN on the side. Obviously, he's one of the is he commissioner of AAF? I think he's commissioner.
I think he might be a co-founder
or whatever. Anyway, he was asked, receivers that are 50-50 balls, contested balls, 50-50. What receiver would you want for a 50-50? He didn't blink an eye. He goes, Mike Evans.
And in the whole league. Wow.
And so Mike.
And they didn't give him a lot of 50-50 balls last year.
Thank you. And you know, the Bucs moved the ball until they got to the red zone. Then it just, you know, they hit a wall for whatever reason. And where was these passes to Mike Evans? What Polian says, he goes, he's a basketball player. He's a rebounder. He can go up and get the ball.
He blocks out.
That's exactly what Polian said. He's got the strongest hands in the league, blah, blah, blah. He goes, this is exactly what you want for a 50-50 guy. And I'm like, where was that?
There's your plunge from 11 touchdowns to 5. It's unacceptable.
Well, they failed on a lot of those. You know, Jameis basically went to Mike Evans every time he was single covered in the red zone. If he saw the single coverage, he went to Evans. They didn't connect. They just did not connect well.
Polian's exact quote, Jameis doesn't have to be accurate when throwing to Mike Evans.
Accurate. Give him a chance.
Yeah.
Ira, got to correct the record here, Mr. Sage.
Uh-oh.
Buccaneers, 20th in the NFL in scoring in 2015, 18th in 2016, 18th last year. They've never scored under Cutter, and that has to change.
Has to change.
They had a very nice balanced offense in 2015.
They did. Nice
didn't
balance.
Result in points.
Couldn't score. They moved the ball up and down the field, led the NFL.
And had a rookie quarterback taking every snap.
Lead the NFL or the NFC last year? Second in the NFL in third downs last year.
Second.
Move the ball, move the chains.
And Jameis led the league with most first down percentages of passes.
So it's a Cutter problem. As far as Bucs fans are concerned, has to be fixed this year.
By the way, Lee,
no way the Glazers bring this guy back with another 18th in the league in scoring for 4 years in a row.
Season.
One more point on the red zone woes, and you're right. They moved the ball very well between the 20s. Part of those woes, part of it. Bad running game.
There was none.
It might have been, was it four scoring touchdowns, running touchdowns, or eight? I can't remember.
It's terrible.
I think it was terrible.
Stop upsetting
four.
The fans.
Yeah. It wasn't a bad running game. There was no running game.
It was horrible.
You can't have be
so
bad
if you can't run it in when the field's constricted. You got to force passes in there. It makes it much harder.
Because defenses know. They can figure it out.
All right, Ira, we've got some very important things to talk about, but first we're going to hear from Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa while you go change your shirt.
Brian, you must be doing something right. You know, to stay in business for this long, you're obviously got a winning formula. You've been in charge here at Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa for several years. How do you keep winning all these awards? Are you tired of winning all these awards that I hear about? What's unique about Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa?
I certainly say we don't get tired of winning them. It is a challenge to win them, but we've won the Dealer of the Year 2 years in a row now. We're a four-time winner of Dealer of the Year. It's an honor that's only given to 20 dealers throughout the country, and it's a privilege. But the way that we do it has to do with our team. The car business is notorious for having a lot of turnover, and fortunately for us, that's not the case. We have over 36 employees that have worked with us for over 10 years, and that says a lot about them and their commitment to us. The car business did not go through a good good time a few years back. And they stuck with us, and we stuck with them too. And it's about us working together and working with each other. One of the things we've done recently, which really has turned into a great program for us, is we get together twice a month with different people from different departments just to share how we can make our customers' experience better and just sharing ideas between departments, because we all deal with different things, and sometimes you get to get different ideas from different people. And then in turn, how do we make our relationship between our employers and our associates better? So we go on different outings outside of work just to get to know each other a little bit more and have a better understanding. We work together as a family to help give the best experience to our clients.
Ira, I thought when Brian mentioned going out and building a team and working together with the employees, going out for team events, you know, and bonding, I thought you were going to ask about the menu. I was sure you were going to ask.
I'm not going to ask about the menu, but as far as teams go, you know, this is a 13-3 team. This is not a 5-11 team. I've been impressed every time I've been here, and I've been here several times. You've got some good people working for you, Brian, and I know you take good care of them.
Well, I really appreciate that. It's like I said, it's not the general manager. It's everybody else that takes care of our clients that makes the experience for them. So I appreciate it. Thank you, guys.
All right, Ira, we're back.
And, speaking of shirts,
and you
I'm
look
wearing
good.
My Sage shirt for the Bourbon Street Takeover that Saturday night when I give a little talk to Buck fans, a little meet and greet. I'm going to wear that Sage shirt that my wife got embroidered. And no, this goes out to my son. It's not going to say SAG. It's going to say Sage.
I would never call you SAG. How dare he? Here you go, Sage. J.R. Sweezy. A quick reaction, Ira. J.R. Sweezy. The Bucks. He got past a physical. The Bucks released him. He has no job. What does that tell you about J.R. Sweezy?
Here we go again. He joins a long, undistinguished list. Every year we talk about this, Lee. Guys that get released by the Bucks and never get picked up. Guys that started games for the Bucks never get picked up. Now, somehow, Swaggy Baker got another job. He did. And I hear they're expecting big things out of Mr. Baker. Good luck with that.
What does it tell you about Sweezy? There's an offensive line shortage in the NFL. He's known as a hard worker, nasty type. He's not even 30 years old. He's walking around.
Everybody looking for offensive line help, Lee. Nobody's looking Sweezy's way. It's another indication that, you know, in some spots, the talent level hasn't been what it should be.
Sweezy is one of those guys. And the stat geeks with the Pro Football Focus tribe will freak out when I say this. I cannot blame Jason Light. Everybody says, "Well, Sweezy got hurt." I said, "Well, I want to see that freaking crystal ball. Mega Millions is $500 million. I want those numbers. If you got a crystal ball that sees the future, give me those
so
numbers."
You're saying that injury affected him even though he was playing last year. That's what you're saying.
A gentleman by the name of Ian Beckles, who once played guard himself, right guard, said on his famous podcast, not quite as popular as yours, by the way, but it's popular, in the trenches, that he said Sweezy lost his power. He was never the same since that back surgery.
That and begs what the question, Steve, what's he doing out there?
Yeah, I'm glad he was out there taking reps from Caleb Benenock in a freaking 5-11 season.
Who's now being counted on this year.
Yeah, it's disgraceful. It's bad management.
As Steve wrote, I don't know how many times, his research, he could not find an offensive lineman coming back from back surgery, who started the full season. And Sweezy kept that streak up.
All right, Sage. Levante David sat down with Buccaneers.com for a very long, extensive interview. They've been doing these real long-form interviews with players. And he sat down with them, and there were some neat nuggets in there. He talked about his early relationship on the team with Derek Brooks. Brooks was not playing, just as a guy he could go to and showed him the ropes. Talked very much about Barrett Rood. And how Rood, being a Nebraska guy, now he's coaching at Nebraska, really took a keen interest in David, telling him all where to go in Tampa, who to talk to, who to stay away from, everything. And a lot of interesting stuff there. But one thing that David said, he said there were, quote, situations, plural, with the Bucks last year on defense. It appeared he was talking about on defense situations that he acknowledged, himself and others didn't address, and they're committed to not letting that happen again. And they've all asked each other, hey, call me out, call everybody out. We're all going to call each other out. And Levante David addressed this. So now, what does that tell you? I mean, we've discussed this before in other ways, but here he is saying situations that went unaddressed. Is this an indictment of Dirk Cutter?
It suggests a leadership void.
Get me going on Jameson leadership.
It's a leadership void. And you've mentioned it many times. You know, why did it take till the next to last game in Charlotte and the end of that game. And, you know, if Baker doesn't screw up that play, nobody's after Baker in the locker room for 15 weeks of screwing around. You know, that brought it to a head, but there could have been plenty of times before that you get in the guy's face. I would have gotten his face when the Hard Knocks cameras were. I wouldn't have let it go past Hard Knocks. I thought he was a clown. So they should have let me take care of him because I had the intel from Jay Gruden. I had it in March. Good player doesn't like to practice. Now, I didn't see the good player.
Now, if every player would have chipped in, let's say $8,000, you'd walk away with 100 G's.
Nobody was on Swaggy Baker before Joe Buck's fan.
Enough of that.
Never mind enough of that.
What's going on here?
I'm proud.
The coaching staff benched Vernon Hargraves, and they didn't bench Baker. And he was the number one pick. First round pick.
Now, he said situation, so it goes beyond Baker, apparently. Beyond Baker.
Sure.
But he's the poster child, you know, for this problem. I go back to Clinton McDonald, not just because I respect Clinton McDonald.
Oh, that's another one I got.
But, you know, after week three, I'm starting Clinton McDonald. You don't like it, Baker? Too bad. Investiture, free agent, target, you got to play him. You know, McDonald, nice guy. He'll take the lesser snaps. He won't bitch about it. He'll still play hard. Whereas if Baker's coming off the bench, you're not going to get anything off him. That's no way to run a football team. Who's the better player? Who gives you better effort?
Thank you.
Who helps you win more?
Mm-hmm.
Clinton McDonald. McDonald should have been playing. I rest my case.
I got a question for him about McDonald. It was on Pro Football Talk today.
And they probably still would have went 5-11, but it would have been the right thing to do.
Yeah, I mean, Baker, I almost hate saying this because I like Jameis. I enjoy talking to his dad after games, and I've talked to his mom before. It almost feels like I'm spitting in the face saying this, but I got to be honest. Jameis, everybody bragging about him being a leader. Him piling on after Quan Alexander got on Baker. That's no leader. I'm sorry. That's no leader. Like you said, should happen in preseason. But I got a Clinton McDonald question for you, and it relates to the Bucs. Currently. Well, not so much currently. It was on Pro Football Talk today. Did you know that Clinton McDonald had staph infection after 2015 surgery?
No.
Neither did I. There's still a staff thing going on?
You're not talking about Mercer, are you?
Well, it's just staff.
Oh boy. No, I didn't hear anything about it. They don't need that kind of problem at one buck.
Well, if it's after surgery, I mean that's
they sadly could be in the hospital.
Sadly, that does happen.
It's a common thing, sadly, with surgery.
Now, Steve, you want to address this leadership thing from a coaching standpoint.
No, I don't. We've addressed it tons of times and we all know the drill. The leadership on this team stinks. And now the better question is, has it been fixed already?
I think it has been helped.
Fixed.
Well, we'll see. Yeah. You bring in the Bo Allens, the Vinnie Currys, the Pierre Pauls, the Ryan Jensens. I think it's going to help.
The Jensen family loves Twitter, don't they? Even the dad. Even Steve and the dad got into a little back and forth.
Oh, well, Dean Jensen, Brian Jensen's dad. Interesting guy. I've heard him.
He's reading Joe Buck's fans.
Oh, he follows us.
I've heard
all the fathers do, I think.
I've heard him speak. He's a very erudite type of fellow in his mindset. Whatever. Anyway, they're small town folks from middle of nowhere, Colorado, and they've got a neat story with the older brother who was a star football player who didn't make it. And here's Ryan Jensen. And anyway, but the dad is trying to explain to Joe Bucks fan that, you know what, if the Bucks win, that's all that matters. Doesn't matter about slogans or whatever. People will rally and great things will happen. Well, look, the guy wasn't a Bucs fan until this year. All I know is there was a winning team here in 2010, and there was a winning team here 2016. They're not packing the house. There was no mob scene in the streets. And the last playoff game featured 20-something thousand Giants fans in it. So the issues in Tampa here run a little deeper than putting up some W's, but we love the passion. And you know what? I figure Mr. Jensen, Ryan Jensen's Mr. Nasty. We got to get a little tough with that guy.
Well, I got, by the way, real quick, got to say thank you for all the followers. There's a couple of players I'm not going to mention. I know their followers listen, but I don't think they want to be outed. We already talked about Jensen's dad. I assume he listens. He certainly follows us on Twitter. I know Adam Humphrey's dad listens. I know Cam Brate's dad listens.
You're talking about podcast?
Podcast and Twitter. And this morning or this afternoon, Ali Marpet's father retweeted something of ours.
I love that Marpet family.
And I checked. He follows us.
I love they're real characters out there.
We're very popular with the fathers of players.
And Miko listens to us. So there you go.
Well, Miko, you can't get any better than that.
All right, Ira, let me hit you with this last one here just because it's fun and it's passionate.
Does it have anything to do with jury duty?
No, nothing to do with your jury duty. You know, I wrote a scathing editorial, if you want to call it that. The Bucks picked a couple of new slogans, raise the flags, and wreak havoc.
I could just see your blood boiling as you're reading about those slogans.
So, you know, the wreak havoc thing got under my skin for a variety of reasons. And that's what Mr. Jensen was responding to. But
you didn't like Siege the Day either, right?
Well, it was atrocious. And, you know, a lot of people might say, well, who cares about a slogan? And the answer to that question is...
The Glazers.
The important answer to the question is, you know what? We're all old enough, all of us sitting here, to remember teams that have moved, teams that have folded, teams that have left town that we didn't expect, that we've seen through the years in various sports and whatnot. And you know what? Nobody cares about marketing slogans until all of a sudden there's the threat that your team might be leaving town and you're wondering, oh, we didn't connect with the fans the way we should have. We didn't, you know, and it didn't work for us. Well, you know what? I don't put it past that the Bucks will never leave Tampa. There have been teams, you know, we see what's going on with the Rays, and I'm sure they would have loved to have better marketing 10 years ago and be a little bit more entrenched. So when I see a crap-ass slogan like wreak havoc, that Frank and then the marketing guys out there saying you're going to build customers, you know, grow your customers, which is really, you know, and connect with the little kids, and which is really the McDonald's philosophy of the Happy Meal and all that stuff that they were brilliant with, selling hamburgers to grownups with Ronald McDonald and a Hamburglar running around. And the guys, wreak havoc is a slogan that people don't even understand. Kids don't even understand. I got smart kids. Neither of them are familiar with the phrase. Talk to their friends. Never, I don't know what it means. 10, 12 years old, they don't know what it means. So it just speaks to the Bucks' garbage marketing. They're a team that hasn't connected where you have the Lightning, who have connected, and the Bucks haven't found the secret sauce. And, you know, these slogans, you keep screwing it up, you keep not connecting with fans, and all of a sudden, you're the guy on the list talking about moving because you don't have that base.
Well, Steve, you know, that was a very nice flowery speech you just gave.
Thank you.
But I want to remind you, Lee, and I know for this for a fact, there was a time not that long ago before Stamkos and Kucherov and Hedman got to town when the Lightning were giving away thousands of tickets a night. Every night. Remember the Cowboys owned the team? It was
before
disaster.
That, the Japanese guys.
Yeah, but before Vinick came around. And after the Japanese.
Oh, the Cowboys.
Cowboys.
I think you were talking about the guy from Alabama.
It was a disaster. It was a disaster.
What was the guy from Alabama's name?
A.O. Williams.
Before
A.O. Williams, the insurance man. You're a stud or you're a dud. Now, I'm looking right at you, Isbitz. I don't think there's any question which side of the fence you fall on.
Dud.
Kobayashi, was that a... No, that's a eater.
No, hot dog eater. That's a hot dog eater. Steve, my point is this, though. We have seen that when the Bucks build a powerful team that's good over a period of years, they take over this town. And it'll happen again if they can get there. I don't know that they can get there.
Yeah, not this year.
And you can't be a one-year wonder. That doesn't work. 2010, no, 2016 doesn't work because the allegiance always lags behind the scoreboard. There's a lag. But if they're good 3, 4, 5 years in a row, they make the playoffs, like that run from 97 to 02, nice little run. That was a tough ticket. We know that before that, Lee, that famous story, and I'm going to end my part of the podcast with this story. Lee, this is a true story. I don't know if we've said this. Guy goes to Kmart, you know, 1992, goes to Kmart with his kid and parks the car in the parking lot and puts $2 tickets underneath his windshield wipers with an envelope, and it says, help yourself. Goes in there for an hour, comes out with the kid. They got packages, comes back to the car. There's 4 tickets there. I mean, that's a classic Buck story, and I believe it's true. And that's what happens when you lose. It's hard to generate enthusiasm. This is not Chicago Cub fans. They'll come. St. Louis Cardinals, you know that market very well, Lee. Now, the Cardinals have been good for a long time. They don't go 70-92, the Cardinals. But even if they did, the fans would stick with them. That's tradition. We don't have that.
They're barely above water. They got rid of their manager.
We don't have that, Steve. You got to win. You got to win.
Well, you represent tradition, Ira. Sports coverage in Tampa. I'm still committed to getting you in that Ring of Honor. This helps now. Senior committee. Imagine if you could get Jimmy Giles in there.
I'm not stopping at Giles. I'm
Simeon.
Here comes James Wilder. Simeon's still a modern day guy.
Okay. James Wilder.
So I'm not stopping. I'm not stopping. Doug Williams' name's been mentioned out there.
He's been on
that would be a stretch.
He's been on the ballot before on the.
I think you have to be a senior,
right? But he's been on the general ballot before.
You say you can't write the history of the NFL without that player. Well, Doug Williams fits in that category.
One game.
Yeah, one game.
So does Namath.
One game. Yeah. And so does Namath to an extent.
You were talking about slogans, and I hate to rewind here a moment. Have you ever met a fan, Ira, ever met a fan that, you know what, that little cute little slogan they come up with, that convinced me. I'm going to cut a $2,000 check.
Never.
I don't understand, and I have to be up front. I don't have a marketing degree, never took a marketing class, never took a PR class. Only thing I took was history and journalism, so don't get me going about Ulysses S. Grant.
And food. Food 101.
I didn't need any classes for that.
There you go.
But it's not just Glazers. Every professional team, hundreds of thousands of dollars on marketing with these dumb slogans. What's the payback? I don't see it. I don't understand.
You know when you do that? When you're not winning. When you're not winning. You focus on slogans. You know, I got a theory.
Look, it's about kids. Kids grow up.
They can't spell reek. They'll say R-E-E-K.
Well, we know that, but every good business looks to the kids because they know they're going to grow up.
I mean, that's what newspapers didn't do, right, Steve?
Well, exactly, but I mean, look at pick a lot of teams, especially baseball. They market to the kids, and the kids grow up, and it becomes that tradition, and it matters. Look, I just don't want the Bucks to move. So, and I don't want them to suck at anything.
Well,
and when they churn out bad marketing, it doesn't help anybody.
I'll say this about moving. In the NFL, at least, it's all about stadiums. You got a good stadium, nobody's moving. They're not letting you move.
Yeah. I was thinking, yeah.
Ray J's holding up pretty well. It's 20 years old.
Have a Super Bowl this fall.
They've done some upgrades.
Sure.
Got a Super Bowl in 2021. Now in 10 years, Lee, 15 years, it might be an issue.
Yeah.
Ray J might be an issue, but not now.
Nice. Yeah, well, that's what we're talking. We're looking forward.
The only reason why the Raiders are moving out of Oakland, they got a state-of-the-art facility they're building in Vegas, and Oakland's sitting there twiddling their thumbs.
Absolutely.
Yeah, these things happen. Look, in 12 years, we could be looking at Orlando making a massive bid to relocate the Bucks, courting the Glazers with a new stadium. It's in the market.
Right in the I-4 corridor.
Yeah, it's right here, and it's in the Bucks' general market. Come on over, Glazers, and all of a sudden it's gone from Tampa.
Gotta have a stadium.
So, anyway, it's fun, Ira. We're here. The season's here. You know, do you want to go out with a note of optimism for training camp?
Well, I'll say this. Our next podcast is going to be right at One Buck Place. I believe it's going to be following the first workout. I know Lee's going to be looking for a snow cone or a slice of pizza while you and I, Izbits, are focusing on the action on the field. And we'll see what's going on. But I'll tell you what, the next podcast, we're going to have some meat on the bone because we'll have people arriving and we'll have competition. We'll have something to talk about.
Something to talk about. This.
We pushed this as far as we can push it.
Yeah, I'll say it publicly. For whatever reason, NFL teams, they think it's a big deal that players show up to work for the first day.
Yeah.
Every one of our listeners shows up for frickin'
work. Unless McCoy's wearing a boa constrictor around his neck.
I don't care if he's wearing a loincloth.
One important note for training camp, important note for fans heading out. I was reading the fine print on the Buccaneers, what they allow you to bring to training camp, and it says right in there, no umbrellas that block visibility will be permitted.
For the fans?
For the fans. So I don't know of an umbrella that opens up that doesn't potentially block somebody's visibility. So if you think you're going out there with a big sun umbrella to walk around, according to what the Bucs have put out there, not going to happen. They're looking for small umbrellas.
Small umbrella. Where
if it rains, you pop it open. It's a one-person umbrella kind of thing.
Not a golf umbrella.
Exactly. So just a heads up to fans, you know, big deal if you have to throw it back in your car. But there are a lot of people who plan on, you see them walking down 19, Ira, with their sun umbrellas. Those big things aren't going to cut it at One Buck.
And it doesn't affect you because you're under the tent and you never leave.
Come on. Stop making things up.
Get out of here, Ira.
And I've never seen Lee fishing for a snow cone with action on the field. How dare you?